Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Unicus Radio Hour. Hope you're all doing well. Pleasure to be with you again. Just making some final adjustments here as we prepare for takeoff. So anyway, as I was saying, okay, hold on. Hang on, folks. I'm trying to set things up here so we can have a show. Special guest tonight is Cameron Day. Hopefully that'll all work out for us. Cameron, can you hear me?
I sure can, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. And I was very interested in your latest article. And, of course, your website is ascensionhelp.com. You've been helping people to ascend for some time, and I appreciate that. I've been sending some people your way. I do get a lot of emails from people asking me how do we deal with this problem of these mental parasites or ankle biters, as you like to call them. Do you want to just dive into what you were outlining on your latest article?
Sure, Robert. Absolutely. Thanks again for having me. It's always good to be here.
My pleasure.
And yeah, so that latest article was about a tactic that the dark forces or the archons, if some people like to call them that, I call them ankle biters rather than archons, or sometimes I call them arc yawns, like, you know, YAWN, because they're somewhat tedious and boring at this point.
But yeah.
As a way for them to combat the influx of lightworkers incarnating onto this planet, they started doing a nasty bit of manipulation where at the time that the soul commits to the body, usually that happens right around the birth.
Yeah.
Your energy stream essentially intensifies and comes full force into that particular infant body. And so what they do is, at that moment where you're committed, they yank your energy out of that infant, stick it into another infant that wasn't of the family that you were choosing to come into or intending to come into.
Yeah.
And then that particular family that they choose is almost 100% of the time very dysfunctional and abusive, so that abusive parents will shut that lightworker down throughout their lifetime, essentially doing the job of the ankle biters for them.
Wow.
Right, because if a being gets the parents that they want, which was the case for me, then they have to commit time and energy into psychically attacking that person.
Right.
You know, invading their dreams, setting up stressful dream scenarios, preventing them from getting a good night's sleep. That's a very common tactic of theirs.
Yeah.
Also, you know, sending people into their path that will divert them from their path or bring them into a, let's say, difficult set of circumstances so that they're emotionally unsettled, mentally unsettled, and just not centered within themselves and tuning into what they came here to do. Because to actually awaken to a lightworker mission is oftentimes very difficult, because it means that your worldly goals that you were given or handed or shown, this is the list of the things that are acceptable in society. Mm-hmm. These are the high status paths. These are the medium status paths, etc. Well, your path isn't in listed in there anywhere.
Yeah, I did a show about that a couple weeks ago, Self Mastery, and it's a very interesting book, and it really, really helped me to understand that it's not good to compromise oneself. That it is really about the journey, but we don't always know where we're going. So it's important to stick with one's internal guidance so that when you do stray from the course for whatever reason, that you can find your way back onto your path, because each path is very personal.
Exactly, exactly. And so for a lightworker that got bumped into the wrong family, it's that much more difficult for them to connect to that path in many ways, because sure. growing up, their parents were constantly telling them that they were imagining things when their psychic abilities were developing, for example.
Yeah.
Plus, usually given a heavy dose of abuse and imprintings of worthlessness.
Right.
You know, you're a bad child. You're no good. You're never going to amount to anything. All the things that dysfunctional, abusive parents put onto their children.
Yes.
All gets added on to that lightworker who already feels kind of like a stranger in this world in many ways.
Wow, you know, this is really hitting home. I mean, literally home in my home. This has been a topic all this weekend long, pretty much. My son is graduating from high school this week, and so they have a lot of parties, and he's only 17, so obviously I have to keep an eye on him. Even when he's not home, I'm trying to text him and see where he's at. So Saturday night comes along, it's 12:30 at night, and I say, hey, it's late, come on home. And he says, okay, right? Which means I take it to mean you're coming home. Well, apparently he and a few of his friends decided, well, he said, hey, guys, I know this great beach. It's beautiful. It's, you know, on the way back to you. Well, before I drop you guys off, I got to show you this beach. So they head down there, and there was a few other guys at the beach that they've never seen around this area before, and these guys were in a panic because there was a girl there that was passed out. Apparently she was just raging drunk to the point where, I mean, dangerously drunk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unresponsive, okay? Completely passed out. And turns out it was the girl that my son took to the prom. Now, they're not romantically involved, but it just worked out that was the only girl that he would agree, you know, on short notice or whatever. It was sort of like that. This year they only gave him like a week to find somebody, and that was it. So anyway, everybody's the guys, whoever these strange guys are freaking out. And the two guys or three guys that were with my son, they were panicking, and my son was saying, hey, calm down, you know, we need to call an ambulance. Well, when he said that, the guys that were with this girl, they just panicked and left. They just ran, which was strange. And the next thing they did, what my son and his friends were to make sure that, she was going to be safe. Actually, one of my friend's sons is studying to be an EMT. So he was there and he was checking her out, and he was really concerned because he could tell she was near death. And the reason I'm telling you this is because she comes from a broken family. And I've been mm-hmm. wondering why she's at 16, she's feeling suicidal and all this stuff. And you're telling me things that I've kind of intuited about her, even though I haven't really spent time with her. I kind of know her vicariously through my son and what he's telling me. So
right.
It's possible she's another victim of this that has been shunted into a situation where she could actually be a great light worker, but because she's being so heavily bombarded or put into circumstances almost beyond her control. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, the problem was that she came home after a party. It was 11:30, and she said to her mom, "I want to go out again." And her mom said, "No way! It's late. You're staying home." Well, so the mom goes to bed, and guess what? The daughter sneaks out, and she ended up, like I said, with these guys. We don't know who they were or are, but it was so critical that when what happened was, she finally admitted to him today that the doctors thought it was a suicide attempt because her blood alcohol level was at 0.35, which means you're technically about to stop breathing. It's the same level as like having anesthesia in a hospital. And
wow. So
if she had just got left there for whatever reason, if she didn't get to the hospital fast enough, she at that point, she probably was going to just die. So it was my son. I felt, you know, on some level, I'm biased. He is my son, and I've had a lot of experience with these kind of things where intervention is not, it's not like even on your mind. It just sort of happens. You know,
right.
You say, oh, it's just a freak accident. Not really. There's a higher mind involved in all of our lives. It's just most of us don't always recognize it as such, you know?
Exactly.
So anyway.
Yeah, and so it was wonderful that he was drawn there so that he could essentially save her life. Because, see, the thing is, when you're in a body as a light worker, there's certain things that you can do that you can't do from outside of the system.
Right. That's why we're here.
That's why we're here. Otherwise, we would have cleaned it all up without ever having stepped foot into this world. Right?
Yeah, right. It's like the guys that do the drones, as opposed to guys that are actually boots on the ground.
Right, exactly. So we're the boots on the ground crew, and it's really important for lightworkers to understand that, especially when they're lamenting the difficulties of just life on Earth in general and the insanity of the world and. Warlike governments and all of that that's going on out there and the people that are pushing for global destruction.
Right.
When they are in that state of despair, it's really important to remember you're here on a mission, and it's the mission that matters. And it's not so much that your life circumstances are... How do I put it? It's hard to say this without sounding kind of callous, but essentially, we didn't come here to live really happy lives within the Matrix, right? We didn't come here to be celebrities and people of stature and status that the Matrix of Control can hold up as an example of how a person should be.
Yeah.
We came here to be the exact opposite. We came here to be rebels and misfits and screw ups and people that rebel against the control on this planet. And so when you're a rebel, you're marginalized. And we knew that coming in, that we would be marginalized. So we knew that life wasn't going to be all roses and sunshine, because the mission of freeing this planet from its enslavement is what matters the most. And that can be kind of cold comfort to somebody going through a really rough period. I mean, I fully understand that, and I sympathize with that. And I've been there. We've all been there. But it's just, if you can just kind of remind yourself that I'm a soldier and I'm here on a mission for light, for freedom, for life, the life force that needs to flow on this planet instead of being distorted and enslaved. And I'm here to free this human slave colony that we have on planet Earth here. And if you could remind yourself of that, I'm here on a mission. And then remember that most of your work is happening while you're asleep. That's also a really key thing.
True.
Well, a lot of light workers are like, well, I don't know what to do. Well, just set your intent when you go to sleep at night that you will go where you're needed to do what your specific skill set can lend to the mission. And also, though, set an intent that at least half of the night that you'll get deep, restful sleep where your dreams are only between you, your higher self, and your subconscious mind, so that no outside force is intruding on them, meaning no ankle biters are manipulating your dreams.
Right.
And that you're not out on missions all night long, because then you won't get a good night's sleep.
True.
That's also really important.
Right.
Really important that you have at least half of the night that's just for you, your physical body, and your mental, emotional body to rest and repair and have just, really the really nice kind of simple dreams that you have when it's just you, your higher self, and your subconscious.
Right.
Those dreams tend to be very low-key. You're usually talking with 1 to 4 people at most, and there's usually some sort of deeper meaning to the conversation. Those are the types of dreams that are coming from your subconscious and your higher self. So you want half of the night to be like that and the other half to be where you're fulfilling your mission as a light worker. And you'll know that those don't seem like regular dreams. They'll be generally an epic series of events leading from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, whether it's taking out some part of the dark grid or going on a rescue mission, rescuing people, oftentimes children, rescuing souls from imprisonment, that type of thing. Those are the types of quote unquote dreams or fourth density experiences that you'll have when you're out there doing your light worker role. So it doesn't have to be that you're doing something in your waking life that looks like what a light worker would do.
Right.
You could be living a normal day-to-day life with a family and a day job and all that kind of stuff. But then at night, you're out doing what you're really here to do.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing I forgot to mention was that girl was actually adopted. And she's from Korea. And she's living here with, you know, Caucasian parents in America. And, I mean, she's fully Americanized and everything. But there's I could tell when the day that my son picked her up for the prom, I took some pictures. And I can tell that she just was not very connected at all to her mother, her adopted mom. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just like serious disconnect there. So now you got me thinking. I'm wondering, well, gee, I wonder what her biological parents would have been like. Would they have been more supportive? Could they have been or not? I mean, it's just interesting now. You got me really curious about this whole deal.
Yeah, see, adoption is also tricky. Now, it could have gone that she got bumped into the family that then put her up for adoption. That's one way that it could have gone down. Mm-hmm. Or it could have been that she really did get the parents that she chose, but that her parents' lives were essentially altered or attacked or vectored into a situation where they felt like they couldn't support having a baby, so that then they then gave her up.
True, but now her adopted parents are separated to make things even worse. So what you're describing is, as far as, you know, because I do think there's more light workers that have come in recently. So I've sort of, I don't really know this person, but I've briefly talked to her, I've taken her picture, and obviously she's been on my mind for the last few days after what happened. In fact, the whole town is, I think, unfortunately, I live in a small town, so it's good and bad, you know, as far as keeping secrets, forget it. you know, that just doesn't really work. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. It's just it's just really curious to me. Now, there was also a local talk show host was talking about her aunt and uncle had adopted a young boy who turned out to be extremely evil. Okay? I mean, and literally, they at some point when he became in his early 30s, they had to go to court. And because he was being so violent and disruptive, the judge said, "Do you want a restraining order against this your son?" And the adopted mother said, "Oh no, he'll never hurt me." Well, he might not, but the ankle biters that are controlling him certainly could cause him to do you harm. I've seen that. And, I mean, it's very obvious. And I was trying to impress that upon this, talk show host that, through email, I was just trying to basically assist her into seeing things a little differently, because I know she's mm-hmm. Christian, and I was trying to help her see it from that perspective, you know, that Christ cast out the demons, and it was just like not that long ago, and they're still here with us, you know. People have turned away from it, like, oh, that was back in the old times. No, but that doesn't happen anymore. That was just a bunch of superstition.
Right.
Sorry to say that, you know, that's one of the, you know, I find actually this is probably going to be the biggest hurdle, but probably the most simple thing to do is to explain to people. And that's actually what I've been doing, is writing my next book about this in a way that can summarize for people how prevalent this is, not only in the past, but in the present.
Yes, and that is a really big obstacle for people to understand, because how do you take a person that has their entire life listened to what the media has told them, been indoctrinated into the idea that their particular country, whatever country that it might be, is the greatest, freest nation on earth, because it's not just the United States that has that kind of rhetoric.
Sure.
Many, many, many other countries do.
Yeah.
How do you tell those people that they're elected officials who they respect and admire, along with most of the people in the finance industry, and on and on and on, are actually part of a secret, we'll call them satanic for lack of a better word, cabal that engages in the most heinous acts that you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
So heinous that you don't even want to imagine, that your mind recoils away in horror.
Yep.
And that they do this on a regular basis.
Yep.
As part of their secret religion, and that they're essentially running this planet, and that this same dark secret religious cult has run this planet for at least 10 to 12,000 years.
Yeah, since they took it over. And that's really, again, that's part of what I'm saying. I start in the past because I kind of like to do timelines. So that's how I write my books so far anyway. So I give people a summary of how the universe was created, or I should say how universes are created and our role in all of that. Okay, so I give them a little orientation, a little context here of, you know, why universes keeps blooming, essentially. And we'll keep blooming, you know. So it, and then I tell them, you know, essentially that the God of this universe created a perfect world and a perfect universe. And at some point, there this infection did come in from outside. Because the only alternative to that perspective is that God is psychotic and created a demented universe that is full of destruction and death and suffering, etc. So, you know, I mean, if you buy into the idea that we are created in God's image, right, and the he or it created this entire universe, then you have to ask yourself, why is it so messed up? You know, was that by design? Was it by accident? I mean, these are important questions, and I, like I said, it's really helping to put people in put things into context, in my opinion, that in a way that, you know, it just hasn't been done yet, especially when it comes to religion, you know. It's a huge guilt trip on people, and I know it can help, but in large measure, I think it has hurt people. You know, you can see all the major religions have had internal conflicts as well as external conflicts that have led to bloodshed, torture, and just general mayhem. And so you gotta look at that objectively. I mean, in fact, you know, be more specific. I was shocked as I started to looking into the Middle Eastern culture about their relationship with these beings, and what they call them is jinn, or the genie. We would call them genie. They are not benevolent by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Right? You know, and so as I looked into it and I thought, wow, you know, I mean, this existed prior to the rise of Islam, and there's just so much evidence there that's being overlooked or suppressed, that it was shocking to me. I mean, I don't want to give away the details right now because I really want to present it all when it's time. When I get the book out, I'm actually going to summarize it for people as I do not only this show, but I do a lot of interviews. I think it's going to shake our society to the core. And I mean, human society here on this planet will simply just be shocked. I know I have been multiple times, and this is how I kind of know when I'm doing my work, is when as I go forward, you know, I keep an open mind, try not to be judgmental at all, just keep an open mind saying, you know, okay, what else do I need to know about this subject? And it just comes. It just comes, and it keeps coming and coming and coming. That's why I kind of knew, actually, the last time I did Coast to Coast about the jinn. After that show, I realized I have to write about this. I just have to write not just about that, but all that I've learned in the past few years since I've gone down this path. And, you know, Cameron, I was thrown into the deep end of this back in 1985, right? I kind of knew about these things, but I never really, it's not like I believed it. I never really experienced it full bore in my face, like, it felt
right.
it hadn't
directly affected your life yet.
Yeah, because it wasn't hypothetical at that point. It was happening in front of my eyes, you know, and I was trying to make sense of it. And like I said, you may have heard this before, but it literally took me decades to come to the point where I knew it was real, but I didn't know quite how to tell other people about it. And so I had really, most of my writing about it, I preferred to write about it as fiction. But now I know, I see why I could never finish that as fiction, because it's not fiction, and that would have actually made the problem worse if I'd put it out there in the public as though it were just another idea, you know, of mine. And it's not. It's not at all.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it really is important to admit that, you know, look, we don't have all of the answers, but we do have a lot of information. Yes. We all have pieces to the puzzle. And see, if people have a broader perspective on human history, once that's actually clearly explained to people, it'll make sense. And it will, you know, it'll be hard at first, because at least to my reckoning, the depth that I've been able to plumb this question, you know, what really happened is that somewhere around, let's just say anywhere from 30 to 50,000 years ago, there was a human race that was unmolested, let's say.
Yeah.
And we developed telepathically from the very early stages, so that there wasn't any type of rift or dissension between people. And wherever there were conflicts, they were easily resolved. So the society in general, because it developed with this telepathy and with this sense that everyone matters equally, and that humans had a deep self-love, a love for themselves and a love for themselves on a species-wide level. So everyone loved everyone, essentially. So a society based on love and telepathic communication is unimaginable practically to people right now.
Right.
And that society had, at least, again, this is the best I've been able to determine through deep meditation, probing this question, you know, searching through what my higher self has shown me, what's in my DNA, and going back as far and as often as possible, that at some point there was, during the technological phase of development of the original Earth human species, that there was a point of beginning to harness large amounts of electricity or electrical power, and that there was an accident, and a catastrophic accident that essentially melted the poles, or the North Pole specifically, almost instantly due to the magnitude of the explosion. And that created the inundation of all of the coastlines, wiping out 90% of the populace. Now, people think, oh, that's Atlantis. Well, no, that was the first time that that had happened, was in this time, and this was before Atlantis.
Right.
Now, the remnants of that culture, as they rebuilt themselves, they eventually got to the point of what we now know as, or think of as, the Atlantean culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that took them about 20,000 years or so, give or take, to get to that point. But see, in the interim time, that catastrophe was the opening that the consciousness parasites, the ankle biters, that's what they needed in order to begin to embed themselves into human consciousness. They needed a traumatized race. And that trauma of the original Earth cataclysm has stayed in the human mind and been an opening, a wound, an open source or an open wound that allowed the ankle biters to begin manipulating human consciousness. So by the time we got to the Atlantean era, there were humans that were essentially completely corrupted by the dark forces. And they presented themselves, of course, as people of high esteem and sought out leadership positions, much as we see in today's society.
Right.
Now, then in the Atlantean period, it was a mix, though. There was still a fairly high vibration on the planet. The human DNA hadn't been, at least to my knowledge, by that point, hadn't been altered to what it is now. So people still were pretty telepathic. They still had a lot of what we might consider ascended abilities. But then the ankle biters and their third density minions, see, they have minions in third density. They love to control third density races.
Right.
And they have highly technologically advanced, very warlike third density races that are under their pretty much complete control.
Right.
So they engineered then the second cataclysm of the Atlantean era, again wiping out a good majority of the populace, because everyone loves to live at the beach, right?
Yeah. I do.
And yeah, and so it's, you know, and the thing is, ankle biters love to reuse or copy and paste.
Yeah.
certain events. And so an earth cataclysm is one of their favorite things to copy and paste. So they re-traumatized humanity all over again. They brought in their third density overlords, this time to now enslave the remainders and begin genetically modifying them so that they would be good, docile, ignorant, controllable slaves. And that then was the era of, and it didn't take them very long to, you know, get their essentially reptilian DNA added to the human DNA, increasing the amount, let's say, of reptilian DNA, so that that reptilian brain would be reactive, aggressive, warlike, uncompassionate, unsympathetic, unempathic, so it made that part of the brain much, much larger, shrunk the frontal lobes, reduced the human DNA down to just a two-pair base pair. And I think, I haven't confirmed this, but I'm pretty sure that's the point when they brought in the moon as well. Mm. And the moon being the entrainment device that entrains human consciousness and holds it into this low-frequency pattern. The moon is essentially like a transmission station, transmitting this low-frequency onto the planet, onto all the people on the planet, keeping it held in that state.
Yeah, infrasonic. That's one of the paranormal frequencies, 17 mm-hmm. to 19 hertz. It's below our a level of hearing, but when people are exposed to it, they often see or feel things that are normally not seen.
Exactly, and so that's been the last 12 or so thousand years. Is a completely manipulated genome. And the race being held in this low frequency state so that we would produce continuous and copious amounts of low frequency emotional energy, because the human soul is so powerful, we can create anything. That's one ability they don't have. They can overlay, they can distort, they can conquer, they're great at conquering, they're great at enslaving, but they don't have the ability to actually create like humans do. So they rely on humanity to do the creation for them and to create the energy that they need, because these are fourth density parasites and they need an energy source because they've turned away or cut themselves off from the unlimited universal source. So they're kind of on their own and they're looking for food always. And Earth is essentially a banquet for them.
Smorgasbord for critters. Yeah,
exactly.
Please hold on a moment. I'm going to take a quick break here. I'll be right back.
Okay.
If UFOs are real, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? According to author Robert Stanley, UFOs did land on Capitol Hill in July 2002, but this is not the first time. In his new book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, Robert Stanley documents 224 eyewitness accounts of UFO sightings in D.C. from 1850 to 2006. This book also includes interviews with a dozen UFO experts. According to Robert Stanley, Washington, D.C. has the highest number of UFO sightings per square mile than anywhere else on Earth. How could this be possible, and what does it mean? Why has this fact been ignored by the media? It's high time for you to know the truth about the ongoing alien incursions of restricted airspace in Washington, D.C. Close Encounters on Capitol Hill is 408 pages of the most well-researched information ever written on the subject of UFOs and ETs. This controversial book is only available at unicusmagazines.com. That's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. Order your copy today.
Okay, we're back. Actually, that's a little misleading. You can get a copy at Amazon.com or actually quite a few bookstores are carrying it these days through their websites. Barnes & Noble, they all have it. So just Google it or go to my website, unicusmagazine.com. Click there. There's a link. There's a lot of free information. There's also the image archive. I highly recommend people taking a look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. It's obviously something the government won't tell us about. They certainly don't want you to see it, but there it is. So, Cameron, we're back. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing great, Robert.
Yeah.
I just would like to pick up on that narrative where we left off.
Sure.
that now, yeah, for 12,000 years, we've had hidden controllers. Let's call them the third density pirates that serve their fourth density ankle biter overlords.
Right.
And they have been staying out of sight for the most part for, let's say, the last, I don't know, 6,000 or so years. They've just been pulling the strings from behind the scenes using human proxies.
Right.
And also the occasional, let's say, human spacesuit. In other words, what walks and talks like a regular human is being piloted remotely like a drone by an ET somewhere. And that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that it's really hard to tell somebody that you can't put that out on the table right away. You've got to kind of build your.
Oh no, I'm familiar with that. The Robotoids.
Yeah.
Dr. Beter, actually, he did a radio show out of Washington, D.C. I didn't know that till recently, but I learned about him back in the 1980s when I was just starting to get into all this as a way of trying to figure out my own life circumstances. But that's ultimately something that I did learn when, as I wrote the second book about Washington, D.C., Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., is the conclusion is, if you haven't read it, it's pretty amazing about how it was clear to me that demonic possession was actually quite common in Washington. It's just that not everybody's head spins around. You know, it's not mm-hmm. as obvious as in the movie. Now, that was a dramatization of a real event, okay?
Right.
And what most people don't understand is that there's a demon in the Capitol. Well, and that's where they make all the policy from. So, you know, it explained a lot of things. Like I said, I was very uncomfortable being the messenger of that kind of bad news. But, you know, somebody had to say it. Somebody just had to bring it up.
Exactly. And it does need to be put out there. See, there's this major problem in the New Age that you can't look at anything negative because you through the law of attraction, you'll attract it to you. and they say, oh, you know, well, you know, if you're trying to fight against that, well, and then they find, what you resist persists.
Yeah.
You know, which is what I call a New Age falsism, not a truism, but a falsism, because
right.
it's not true. What you don't know and ignore is free to roam around and do whatever it wants to do.
Yes,
underneath your nose, because you're not willing to look at it.
It gives them a huge advantage too.
Exactly, and then they've used that advantage very well. So as light workers, as light warriors, as soldiers who came into a battle zone knowingly and willingly in order to effect change, we have to peel away all of the layers of deception and look at what's really going on so we can understand it. We can gradually help other people to understand that as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming into our present era from this entire history of let's call it trauma and then invasion and now occupation. The invasion is long gone. Now it's an occupation.
Right.
Now we arrive at the point where, we see these little ships, we see these flashing lights, we see UFOs here and there from time to time. And what's going on there, right? And then we hear about the government is working with ETs and underground bases, and you know, there's lots of information kind of leaking out. We sense there may be some disinfo kind of laced in there. But essentially, we're coming to a stage in the called the Grand Illusion, where the Matrix builders are looking to re-traumatize humanity because we're getting out of control.
Yeah.
The population is getting too big for them. Our collective desire for peace, that human desire to
right.
have peace, is so strong in everyone who hasn't been corrupted into their system that we're just by being here and desiring peace, just average people who know nothing about this, who just want to have a good life for their children,
right?
That desire for peace is interfering with their plans,
right?
So they're looking for some re-traumatization. So they're trying to start a war, a giant war, a world war in the Middle East, so that they can essentially bring the human, let's say, self-opinion or people's opinion of humanity in general to such a low place that then the same ETs that have been hiding behind the scenes, who have been occupying humanity for all this time, will make an appearance and essentially announce that they're here to save us from ourselves.
Right. This fake alien savior bullcrap that they're trying to. Yeah, I'm familiar with that scenario, and I'll tell you, I'll be one of the loudest voices to just say BS. You know, prove it. I want to see the proof. If not, you know, kiss my rear end. Seriously.
Yeah, and it'll be really easy to tell because A, it will be sanctioned by the governments of the world. The world governments will all say, well, you know, we've had a rough time of it, and we really could learn from these new visitors. We're sure it's great that they suddenly showed up when, wink, wink, no, they've been behind the scenes pulling the strings for thousands of years. And of course, they will be humanoid. They'll be really attractive. They'll have the outward appearance that we all would want to see from a friendly set of aliens.
Right.
And they will come in with bearing gifts, right? We have technologies. We have this and we have that.
Right.
All you have to do is just let us guide you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
And people have already been programmed and conditioned to accept that ET savior idea.
Right.
It's rampant not only in the New Age realm, but in so many other facets of society that people will just be like, yes, thank you finally for saving us from ourselves.
Yeah, you're right. We're designed. We are literally conditioned to seek a savior, whatever it may be, in any fields or all fields. And it was deliberately done to us so we would be more subservient. We weren't designed that way originally by God. God gave us free will to be free, not to just, you know, blindly follow whatever the greatest, latest, you know, technology or personality or especially lately, everything is about money. All these shows on television, it's like even going out and finding mineral deposits, you know, like gemstones. Or not even gemstones, just crystals, you know. It's all about, for me, doing that was just, you know, fantastic love of nature. But now it's like they show this crazy show on there. They're like, hey, don't jump my claim. This rock is worth thousands of dollars, you know. And I spent hundreds of hours. And, you know, it's all, everything is coming down to its monetary value, which is idiotic, you know. It's again, I know it serves a purpose. But, you know, what you were saying earlier about, you know, what you know, attracting things to you. The day, I'll never forget, the day in 1985, it was the fall equinox, and I was sitting on the beach, and I'd just done another very hard summer at the beach, and I was really enjoying that day because it was so beautiful. The kids were going back to school. The tourists had sort of faded out, and there I was on this beach that I'd grown up on, and I felt, one of the few times in my life, I actually felt happy to be alive. I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, it was just so beautiful. How could you not feel good just to be alive, you know? Yeah. And there really was no stress on me. And so I wasn't attracting anything. I wasn't thinking stressful, anything about, you know, dark, negative, nothing. I was just in the moment. It was one of the few moments I can say I was truly, truly happy to be alive. You know, it was joyful for me at that moment. My entire being felt charged, you know, from just the perfect weather and the ocean and the lack of, you know, the crowds were gone. So, and yet there was this boy, and he was, gee, now that I think about it, that's weird. My son, something about the beach, right? He saved the girl on the beach. You know, I guess it runs in the family anyway. So yeah, the boy was really troubled. I could just see it on his face. And the fact that he had this huge scar on his forehead, you know, that was obvious, but I could also read his body language and his expressions. I could see he was troubled, really troubled, but it wasn't like I was dwelling on it. I wasn't looking for answers. I just said hi to him and I walked by and went over and I sat down, and I'm telling you, I was really in that moment. I was just feeling really, really happy to be alive. And it actually started with a sound, a tone I'll never forget. It was the boy breaking a sliding glass door, which was not safety glass. He broke the entire plate of glass with his face because he ran into it head first. And it made this I'm very sensitive to tone. because as a musician, I was raised as a musician by my mom. So we always had pianos and violins. And, you know, I mean, I'm very sensitive to these various frequencies. And that sound was, I've never heard anything like it before. It was a little like a bell, but not really. And, of course, there was the crashing sound involved in that, too. You know, the breaking as well as this. Well, glass is really weird. You know it vibrates, right? You ever seen it, like, mm-hmm. in a wind? It'll kind of vibrate. So it had a very unique tone to it that it just wrenched as it happened. It was so weird. It was like a reflex. It's like somebody just wrenched my head towards that sound. Like, what the heck was that? And I'm literally, at that moment, time slowed down. Now, my life wasn't in jeopardy, but why would my vision slow down? Why would everything slow down at that moment, except that instinctively I knew that this was a moment of, it was a life or death situation. You know, I mean, I guess a lot of people have said this, like when you're in a car accident, they say time slows down or something. But it was weird. I mean, it was really weird how your senses kind of change. You know, you could become like hypersensitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it also proved to me that time really is an illusion. In some ways, it really is. If you can slow down time, I mean, what does that tell you about time?
Exactly. And that is actually a natural human ability.
Yeah.
And see, those abilities are coming back online. Those deeper levels or those higher levels of awareness are beginning to come back online. And see, that's also a problem for the hidden controllers as well.
Yeah.
Because once humanity regains telepathic ability again, then it's pretty much game over for them, because they won't be, let's say, connected to that human psychic internet.
Right.
Because they're not part of it. They'll be outside of it, and so they'll be really easy to identify. And at that point, you know, obviously we won't let them have any power over us anymore.
Well, that's good news. So how do people connect to this psychic net, as it were, in your studies? How do you do that?
Well, I have a system of getting clear, and that's really the first step, is clearing off all of the falsehoods, the falsities, the false isms that this life has put on you, because you're not this human being. No matter who you are, whether you're an original human being and you've been incarnating for the last 50,000 years, or whether you're a light worker who just stepped into a earth body for the first time in this life, regardless of that, who you are is far beyond any single lifetime or any series of lifetimes.
Right.
And so your greater consciousness is waiting for you in your subconscious mind underneath all of the things that we build up as our identity. Hmm. So I have a self-clearing system on the website at ascensionhelp.com. The first level, it's a little over an hour. It'll take you to get through it all. And that's all for free, because I want people to be tapped into who they are and to be as clear as possible and to have these tools. They're very simple tools. It's just about using energy to clear energy and to then connect to your greater self, your higher self, your divine inner self, whatever you would like to call it, to get in touch with the real you and begin identifying more with that than with your, say, circumstances from this life. Because regardless of if you got bumped into the wrong family and you had a terrible childhood, you can choose now to get as clear as absolutely possible, as superhumanly possible, let's say. Get super clear, superhuman, and begin to embody the real you. And as you do that, that energy begins to change you. It changes your mind. It changes your cells. Begins to alter your DNA so that it starts vibrating at a higher frequency and begins to multiply. You see that base pair of DNA, it works in pairs, right? So you jump from 2 to 4, and then from 4 to 8, and then you go from 8 to 16. You blow past that old number of 12. I think they chose that number just because it was something that people could kind of hold on to. You could get a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
But human DNA will be doubling as we go forward. And so you can begin doubling your DNA. You can begin doubling your strands and increasing your frequency higher and higher And you'll then naturally have telepathic experiences. You'll have psychic dreams, predictive dreams. You'll be able to know when someone is lying to you. And that's really key. See, people believe all kinds of lies right now because they come from seemingly respectable sources. But when you can't be lied to, when you are a human lie detector, nobody will be able to control you unless they're using coercion or violence.
Right, right. And yes, that's unfortunate. One of the things that was bred out of us when the fallen ones showed up at the behest of these ankle biters, that's one of the things that they did do to our DNA. I'm looking at a book here called Telepathy by George Adamski. It's a three-part pamphlet, and it reminds me of what you're talking about. And obviously, clearing is one thing, but you know, the other thing to help put it into context for people is that we do communicate on a cellular level, and that is done through light, and it's done through infrared and or like a laser-like. It's called a monochromatic coherent light. We typically don't see it with our eyes, but that's another thing. That's another thing that was bred out of us, out of our DNA here on this slave planet. I mean, it went from a paradise planet to a prison planet in a very short time. I know you described it. I have a slightly different timeline that I adhere to at this point. But you know what Adamski is saying here is, you know, everybody is sensitive. It's just some people are they're still laboring under the illusion that they are not, you know, because like you said, they've been raised to believe that. So one of the things about The Matrix, the movie, is I think it's such a perfect analogy. I mean, obviously it was a metaphor for our true situation. And a lot of people, a lot of people knew it, but they didn't really have all the facts to say, wow, here's why, you know, we literally are the batteries for these creatures. They've created this illusion for us so that we will continue to produce for them. But, you know, we have to be contained. So this is one of the things you're saying. You're right. Absolutely. They had to cut our connectivity, to not only to each other, but to the universe, to the creation. And because like it is important for not only knowing the truth, but knowing who we are. Because we could actually see once you actually connect your light to the greater light. It's one of the things I learned early on about Islam is that it's one of the visions that Muhammad had, allegedly, that he actually saw himself as what he described as a drop of light that merged with an ocean of light. So my understanding is, and this was coming from a Muslim who was trying to, you know, tell me the good attributes of Islam, he said to me, that's what they're saying to us when they call us to prayer, is, you know, come merge with the ocean of light, which I thought was pretty amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But you don't hear that.
Exactly. That spirit of the truth, you know, that's in all religions, but then they build up all of this other stuff around it. They basically build up darkness and what I call false light. Yeah. Around it. And yeah. And so there's lots of false light beings out there. So I would just urge everyone not to believe everything you hear, especially if it's coming through, let's say, a channeled source. Most of these channeled beings are receiving information from, we'll just call them the deceivers.
Yeah.
And they're essentially telling people, just hang tight, everything's fine. You know, major change is right around the corner. And the actual truth is that, no, we're fighting a battle here. We are going to win, but it doesn't mean that we don't all have a major part to play in that collective struggle. So I would just urge everyone to get as clear as they can using whatever techniques that work for you, whether it's the stuff on my side or anything else that helps you to get clear, to get connected to yourself, and to get connected into that ocean of light, which I initiate that for people by, one, connecting them to their higher self, and two, connecting them into the core of the galaxy as well as the core of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that people wonder, well, why the galactic core? Well, there's a consciousness of the galaxy. The galaxy is a sentient being, and that sentience resides at the core. So when you connect to that being, it's like plugging into a cosmic pool of light. So it's that little drop connecting to a big drop. Now, as you progress, you'll go beyond that. But initially, that will give you that connectivity and that awareness that you are much, much more than your body or your thoughts.
Indeed. In fact, I've been saying recently, and this is how I start the book, our souls, our seeds, godlings, from a very mature soul that, you know, I mean, if you look at the universe, it's actually, it is organic. It follows the patterns of nature, okay? Because obviously that everything in the universe is nature, but it's a pattern that we know very well. It started from a seed, okay? I mean, even if you don't really think the Big Bang is the best explanation or theory, this is what it appears from our perspective, is that it grew from a seed, a singularity, whatever you want to call it, okay? Mm-hmm. I personally believe it was a soul that was reached a point of maturation where it was ready to now itself go to seed. So it's like, you know, a tree, right? A giant tree is contained within one little seed, okay? It takes mm-hmm. time, and in the right conditions, it grows, when it's mature enough, it drops a bunch of seeds, which then go on to become a whole forest of other trees and so on. So I think the universe is the same way. It was a soul that became mature enough. It left its parent universe and went into an empty space, what we conceive of as a relatively empty space now. Let's say call it an open field. And it bloomed. It bloomed into a universe. And it literally that seed matured into a full-blown universe, and then that universe itself was populated with extensions of itself. You know, it's the holographic fractal. So the pattern just keeps repeating itself again and again. Each time it's unique, but it's essentially the same thing, just repeats itself. We see that in nature all the time. So why would the universe itself be, if that's what, the universe created, then obviously the universe is it's part of it's you know, that's part of its the process, you know, a natural mm-hmm. process. And I've never seen it quite explained like that before. I'm not going to take credit for it. I'm just saying that this needs to be, people need to be reminded of this so they know who they are, as opposed to being lied to and saying, you know, well, you know, you're guilty of sin, and that's why God had to, you know, destroy the planet with a flood. Sorry, right. That's not true at all. That is not, that's a lie.
Right. And yeah, and that's again where the distortions of religion have to be overcome. People need to essentially have their own understanding of the greater truth and not look to anyone else outside of them to deliver that to them, because then it's just a belief.
Right.
If somebody's told you something and you decide you're going to believe that, it means that you don't really know it. You haven't had an experience. You haven't had an experience of it. You haven't had an awareness that led you to an understanding. It's just not knowing and believing what someone else has told you. So we need to step out of that, step into knowing, or embrace the reality that oftentimes there's things that we don't yet know. And we can just say, I'm not fully clear on that, but I'm going to keep questioning and seeking answers from within, because inside of you is everything that you need.
Right.
It's not about having an external source to fuel you. You are that source that you're seeking, and that source is inside of you. It's in your heart. So that's where we all have to turn to get our answers.
Right. You know, and that was one of the key turning points of the character of Neo in the movie The Matrix, is he began to believe that he really was the one. And at that point, because his consciousness was unencumbered, he became the one. Because that's the thing about consciousness, it's primary. This is the other thing that has to be completely done away with, is this nonsense that consciousness plays no role in creation. You know, science has tried to divorce us from that understanding. And we do play a part in all this. We have a huge role to play, you know, but we've been pushed off to the sidelines like, no, just be spectators.
Right. Yeah. And the idea is that, you know, it's a mechanistic system,
yeah,
and that you're just a cog in the machine, but that's programming that comes from a mechanistic consciousness that doesn't have creativity, that isn't really part of the creative process. It isn't part of the life force. It isn't in that flow. It's working against that flow. It's trying to dam it up and bottle it up and distort it into a frequency that it will fuel its own, let's say, perversion of the life force. And so because these beings are against the life force, their days are numbered. Their reign of terror is going to come to an end. It's a mathematical certainty. It's a universal certainty that they are already being contained. And that effort to contain them is something that we are all participating in to some degree or another. And the more we can do that, the more we can consciously do that, the more we can, let's say, state our intent that we're going to be part of that process. We're going to be on the team of the divine light that is encircling this darkness to contain it and prevent it from ever spreading again.
Yeah, I mean, right. I that's why I said I think it's an external thing. And that the body of this universe, I mean, like everything you're describing is contrary to what we know about the creative force, right? So how could a creative force also create a destructive force? Or why? Better question is, if it's a conscious universe, why would it create something like that in itself? It sounds more to me like we're describing an infection. And I really believe that. I think that for me personally, that's the model that works. Evil is an infection that came from outside the universe, from God knows where. And I think God does know. But it's still a mystery to us. The point is, it's here and needs to be dealt with, okay? And originally, the infection, the body of the universe, or the creation, had no immune system to this infection because it didn't even exist in this universe. So this is one of the reasons it's taken time. I mean, you know, it's one of the universal questions of religion. Well, if God's all loving and all powerful, why does he allow this stuff? You know, well, I don't think that was the original plan. I think that has been all interrupted. But to what you were just saying, to address what you just said, I think that it's unsustainable. It never was. That's why they tell us stupid things like, you know, well, the universe is all going to destroy itself at some point, get sucked back into a black hole, and entropy is a law. And I mean, come on. It's just stupid thinking, a very, very cynical way of trying to get us to look at things through from their perspective, as opposed to knowing things from a true understanding of a creator, a godly perspective. You know, I mean, that's the other thing. They kind of divorced us from our relationship with the creator. I know that the creator can take any form it wants. It's formless, but it can be anything. Anything it conceives of, it can manifest. And that's true for us because we're all fractals of the hologram. I mean, we're all fractals of the hologram. I said that correctly. So, like I said, our souls are seeds from the original tree, which is from a seed from another. And so it goes. It's in that regard, it's infinite. There is no entropy in that regard. It is self-sustaining, you know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, the consciousness is everything, and that's why our beliefs are key. And I'm sure that's why we're even having this discussion, is sort of help orient people and help them to put things into a different context. So I appreciate what you're doing, Cameron, and I certainly thank you for sharing your part of your evening with us. And please keep me posted. I really appreciate getting updates on the articles that you write. I find them absolutely fascinating and very empowering too. I, as I said, I have been steering people in your direction when it's right. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, some people are very fundamentalists, and there's other places for them to go. But you know, I think this is the bottom line: is we're all in this together. We really are. And I do think that's one of the key ways of presenting the problem, is not saying, well, you know, these religions are causing problems, or the you know, bankers or whatever. By showing everybody that we have a common enemy, that is the thing I believe that is going to unite us. It's probably not the best way, but I do see initially that's going to be the key to uniting mankind, against this adversary.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, if you can't free a slave if he doesn't know he's enslaved.
That's for sure. And that was that's the greatest trick that they ever pulled on us here in recent memory, is convincing us that at least a majority of us, that they don't even exist. Masterful job.
Superstitious nonsense, right? Well, whenever anybody says, "Oh, that's superstitious nonsense," you know that they're deep in the control grid.
Yep. Well, but you see this in nature. A tick can bite you, and you typically won't notice it at the moment, right? They do whatever trick they pulled over your natural systems. They short circuit it, so you don't even know that you're being bit by some parasite.
Yep.
Tumors are the same way. You know, they can invade. They could not invade. They grow in the body, and they can live there sometimes the size of a grapefruit, and you don't. You know, your body hasn't recognized it. It's amazing how this is how parasitic systems work. So, again, I don't think that's natural to the creation. It certainly runs counter to creation, and I can't imagine why the creator of any universe would manifest such a thing, but obviously it exists, so we have to deal with it. That is the bottom line.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'd love to some other time go into the discussion of, you know, why it exists, how it was allowed to exist or where it came from.
Yeah.
That'd be fodder for a very interesting show.
All right, Cameron. Thanks a lot. You have a great evening.
Thanks, Robert.
Take care. Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of the Inicus Radio Hour. I certainly appreciate spending time with you, as always. So, I hope you all have a very, very good evening. And I look forward to our next adventure here together on the Unicus Radio Hour. Until then, good night and God bless.